You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
We've waited a long time. They've waited a long time, but it's nearly that point at which the Raptors can officially begin defense of their championship. The first in franchise history, the NBA postseason is set to begin on Monday in Orlando. And for the Raptors, along with the rest of the Eastern Conference, the matchups are set. So it's exciting that we've taken another step closer. The seeding games are nearly done, though they do still have games scheduled on both Thursday and Friday. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence on CBS Sports Radio. Thanks for joining us. You can find me on Twitter, A-Law Radio, also on our Facebook page. We are asking you which sport has been the oddest, the weirdest, the strangest, the hardest to stomach without fans. So whether it's what you're seeing, whether it's what you're hearing, which one is the weird, the weird atmosphere that you can't get past without the fans in the stand? So either Twitter or Facebook, and we'll try to work in a few more calls this final hour. We're live from the Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loan Studios. When you need certainty in the home buying process with a loan that fits your life, Rocket can.
They enter to Tatum in the paint, turns, wow. Fades on Jang. Tough shot is good. What a brilliant performance. If this is the end of his regular season today, which it will be, Jason Tatum is closing the show in style. 29 points on 12 shots.
Dylan Brooks in his three is not even close off the back iron. Rebound, Tatum snatches it, spins away at the left side. Brooks slows him down. Tatum pressured along the sideline. He's able to get it away to Marcus Smart. That leaves somebody open. It's Kemba Smart. Finds him. Kemba drills the three.
That hurts.
That is the play-by-play team for the Boston Celtics, Cedric Maxwell, along with Sean Grandy, longtime voice of the team on the radio network. And there's an early game on Thursday, a noon Eastern time start in Orlando. So Sean Grandy able to join us now here on CBS Sports Radio. And Sean, before we get to the X's and O's and the playoff bracket, the word came down on Wednesday, though I haven't seen the terms yet, but a contract extension for head coach Brad Stevens. Why is he such a good fit with the Celtics?
You know, there's a continuity. I think one of the most overlooked things in at any level of sports, professional, college, anywhere, before you even get to the specifics of Brad Stevens, is continuity. And look at franchises that struggle. And you could say there's a chicken or egg thing that, well, the team is losing, so you fire the coach. And then all of a sudden you have teams like the Knicks and whatever who've had like 38 coaches in the last 10 years. And the successful franchises, Greg Popovich, Rick Carlisle, the Celtics have had two coaches in 16 years. I mean, that's pretty good. So there's, again, there's a chicken or egg thing, but the continuity helps and the relationship that you have with the front office, and Brad and Danny just work very well together. Brad is not one of these guys. He's still, for everything he's been through and for the money he makes and for the notoriety, whatever, he just loves to coach basketball. He doesn't want to be, he doesn't want Danny Ainge's job, and they fit together very well. And the one thing, also this 2013 Brad Stevens, who I had questions about, because here's this young college coach coming to the NBA. Yes. Is our veteran players, our hardcore NBA guys who've been around, are they going to listen to him? And he's so respectful of players and the game and making guys better that people think of that bad team he had the first year as being young. They weren't that young. That team had, you know, guys who'd been around 7 or 8 years in the league. And, you know, he had Rondo and he had, you know, Jeff Green and Brandon Bass and guys who had been in the league and Gerald Wallace. And he won them over. And that kind of caught my attention. And so when veteran players buy in, the younger players, and there have been a lot of them, they tend to buy in. They tend to buy in also.
So now the Celtics are locked in as the 3 seed in the Eastern Conference. NBA playoffs officially begin on Monday. None of this seeding game stuff anymore. And they will take on the Philadelphia 76ers, which is a little bit odd considering the hope for the Sixers this season. But initial reactions to this series between Boston and Philadelphia.
We've had a lot of time maybe to prepare for it because I was someone certainly that I didn't think these seeding games were going to happen. In April and May when we were talking about putting a plan together, I thought the safest plan was to go right to the playoffs, mm-hmm. and Philadelphia was sitting sixth. So for months you thought about the Celtics and Sixers in the first round. Then when they created the seeding games, you thought, well, here's a great chance for the Sixers to play their way out of it. And this was decided in the first game because they played Indiana in the first game and lost the tiebreaker. And did we know T.J. Warren was going to go crazy for these couple of weeks down there. And so now you have the matchup that is the scariest one that you could imagine. I think, you know, on paper, a lot of people are really high on the Celtics, and maybe they can get to the finals. No Eastern Conference team. You'd have to go back decades to find an Eastern Conference team that got to the finals going through what the Celtics will have to go through. They'll have to beat Philadelphia, Toronto, and Milwaukee in 7-game series to get there. I think only the Lakers have a tougher path to the of the top teams. Only the Lakers have a tougher path to get to the finals because they're going to have, you know, probably Portland, obviously, in the first round, and then Houston or OKC, which is going to be a great series. But I don't think an Eastern Conference team has had a difficult path like this. Now, without Ben Simmons, obviously, the Sixers lose some bite. Do they become more dangerous? Do they become more Joel Embiid-centric? And here's what I've been saying for months leading up to what became the inevitable, which became reality today, which is this series. You don't want to go into a series when the best player is on the other side in a 7-game series. I sat courtside and watched LeBron James almost take out one of the greatest teams in NBA history, the 2008 Celtics. He took them to the final minute of the 7th game because the best player was on the other side. Now, the question is, can Jason Tatum, Kemba Walker, maybe Gordon Hayward, can somebody else be that best player, you know, in the series? And Joel Embiid, not, you know, because obviously, as scary as Philadelphia is, Joel Embiid is going to have to walk the walk here. He's right. going to have an unbelievable 7-game series to beat the Celtics, but he's one of the guys in the league who is capable of doing it.
And he certainly does talk the talk, so he expects that he can back it up.
Tweet, TikTok, TikTok. Yeah.
So tell me this. How surprised are you about the first year of Al Horford with Philadelphia? Because this will be a reunion of sorts.
Very surprised, very disappointed. I mean, the running joke we've had that my partner Cedric Maxwell and I have had is that for years here, first of all, when Kemba Walker replaced Kyrie Irving, that's a heck of a save, and it's turned out very well for the Celtics. But the reason at the start of the year, everyone forgets this now, people weren't that high in the Celtics, certainly not a championship contender, was because they lost Al Horford and didn't replace that spot because he had been the glue guy, oftentimes the best player for the Celtics during the previous 3 years since he came as a free agent. And he had been kind of the Joel Embiid stopper. And then, as fate would have it, the one thing I don't think any of us predicted in the NBA, who think we know what we're talking about, is that he would go to Philadelphia and continue to be the Joel Embiid stopper because they had not played well together. And then when they split them up, you saw there was an earlier seeding game in which the Sixers were great with Embiid on the floor, and then when they went to Al, it was a huge drop-off. So, you know, you got the institutional knowledge of Al having played for Brad Stevens for 3 years. That's obviously going to be a help. You're going to need Tobias Harris to have a big series. But I think one of the biggest disappointments in the league this year has been Al's failure to fit in his first year of what is a big-time 4-year contract. I think intellectually you understood as a Celtic fan that would have been a ton of money to pay Al Horford in the third and fourth years of the deal.
Right.
But the fear for Boston fans was, man, these first year or two, that really shifts the balance of power. And as much as we've come to be disappointed in the Sixers and come to be accustomed to what the season has been for both of them, in October, Amy, this was unfathomable that the Celtics would finish seven or eight games ahead of the Sixers in the standings. That nobody thought that was remotely possible. Remember, Milwaukee and Philadelphia were going to run away with the East. Mm. Run away with it.
And as you point out, Ben Simmons not available, and they lose his 16.5 points, his 8 rebounds, and his 8 assists per game. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence and Sean Grandy, radio play-by-play voice of the Boston Celtics. Just you mentioned Kemba. How is his knee?
it's reacted very well. He's healthy and good. That's a reason, certainly a check mark for the Celtics. Things couldn't have gone much better, particularly in the second week of the bubble for the Celtics. Everybody's healthy, and this is a team that wasn't healthy really all year. You know, at the start of the year you are, then Gordon Hayward gets hurt very early in the season. A lot of guys were in and out of the lineup, various illnesses. Kemba hasn't had a year like this where he's missed a ton of games. He was a super reliable guy that played 36 minutes a game, 80 games a year for Charlotte, and didn't make the playoffs every year. This year, he's on the best team he's ever been on, but he missed a ton of games. But now he's healthy. The Celtics were very careful ramping up his minutes throughout the seeding games. And come Monday night, which is when we all assume we're going to start, he's a full go and feels good and had a really good few bubble games.
When you look at the other matchups, and I kind of felt this way about the bubble, though I feel like all the teams have brought good intensity, but the fact that it could be a crapshoot because there's no home court advantage, because no one's in their comfort zone, so to speak. But if you look at Milwaukee, Toronto, the defending champ, and then we don't yet know about the 4-5, but we know that matchup is Miami-Indiana. Any particular series that you think could be an upset or is ripe for an upset?
I think people are excited to watch Portland play. I'll say this. I don't think they're beating the Lakers in a seven-game series. I think it's concerning. I don't think you've seen LeBron go to the level that he's going to go after sitting and watching the Michael Jordan documentary for 3 months. I think he's going to be pretty locked in when game one comes. And the Blazers, we talk about a team, teams that in the course of games that come from 20 points down, make it a game, and they come back and they tie it, but they don't have enough to cross the finish line. The Blazers have been going hard for a couple of weeks, and it's been remarkable what they've done to come out, you know, from back where they were to probably be the 8th seed, you know, in the Western Conference. But that's expending a lot of energy and leaning very heavily on Damian Lillard, you know, going into a first round series with the Lakers. But as I said, the path, the way it's working out, if you were thinking Lakers Clippers in the Western Conference, man, which path would you rather have? I mean, the Clippers are going to get Dallas. I mean, the Western Conference obviously is a killer, but you're looking at Dallas in the first round and the Utah-Denver winner in the second round. You'd choose that over having to face Lillard, the hottest player on the planet, in the first round. Then Houston-OKC in the second round just to get to the Western Conference Finals. So I don't, you know, I don't think there is a huge upset to be had, because I wouldn't consider one of these Western Conference teams, if Utah at 6 or, you know, Dallas at 7 beating the Clippers would be one. I think in a year that I've been calling the irregular season that finishes, you know, in the next couple of days, it would seem like, right, that there'd be upsets all over the place because there's no home court advantage and whatever. Mm-hmm. I think we're going to be surprised 2 weeks from now. Everyone's going to say, huh, that kind of went the way it was supposed to go, and most of the higher seeds ended up advancing because they were the better teams, not obviously because they had home court advantage. And, you know, you think about, that's one of the things that have the Celtics, you know, people excited about them, because instead of not having home court against Toronto, now all you're dealing with is what color the scoreboard is, you know, for a seventh game.
Yes. And, you know. I do feel like, as much as we've talked about the Milwaukee Bucks, and you mentioned the Lakers for that reason, for the LeBron factor, there was no way they were never not going to finish this season. But the Raptors, to me, even with the loss of Kawhi, the defensive system they use, they're so dug in, and they've the Kyle Lowry factor, I love his leadership. He's even more confident and emboldened now. We've seen, obviously, Pascal Siakam turn into a superstar. I don't know. I feel like they are going to be still an extremely tough champ to dethrone.
They're great. I mean, they're so well coached. They're so bought in to what Nick Nurse wants to do. And they are, listen, the NBA has transitioned. It goes through phases. There was a, you know, when we were kids, there was a big man phase, right? Like centers, that you had to go through centers. Then there was 7-8 years ago, you had a point guard phase, Chris Paul and Deron Williams and Rajon Rondo and this whole group of great point guards. Now this is a league of 6-7 wing players that can defend multiple positions. And you have turned this team into a Pascal Siakam, you know, OG Anunoby. Serge Ibaka fits that category for his position. You have defenders at this position. Guys who get, terminology now is guard up. Can you guard up? Meaning, can you guard taller guys?
Mm-hmm.
And this is some, both Lowry and VanVleet. I mean, Lowry is just, I think, if you also want to poke people on social media or poke listeners, I think it's time to start having, I don't think he's quite there yet, But Kyle Lowry is tiptoeing towards the Hall of Fame conversation, right? Like where you start thinking, huh, if this guy does this for another couple of years and if he wins another championship or goes to the finals again, you really have to start thinking about it. And this is the iconic player now, not Vince Carter anymore, in Toronto Raptors history. And I just he's been perennially underrated except by people in the game. Van Vliet's going to get a big contract. It's a really, really good team. They have played like it all year. They played like a top-five team, really start to finish all year.
Mm. Sean Grandy of the Boston Celtics with us after hours on CBS Sports Radio. So a couple of outside-the-bubble questions. You're doing games from inside the Celtics locker room at the Garden. What's that been like so far?
I'll tell you, if you like Muscle Milk and like power bars, it's an awesome place to be because it's just, I mean, you're just going to clean up. I brought my son in for a game a couple weeks ago, and he sat with me for the game, and he's kind of obsessed with Gatorade. And when he saw, I showed him the closet, like the back closet where there's like hundreds of bottles of Gatorade, and he kind of flipped out. I think that wherever you do it, it was going to be difficult and foreign. You want to create the best technical situation where you have the best monitors, you can see as much as you can see, and make it as normal as possible. And I got to tell you, I don't know if it's psychological or not, Amy, but it just feels better going to work at the Garden.
Yes.
Like going to our office to work feels better. I mean, I'm sure that hasn't made the broadcast better. I can't imagine. It just, you have that feeling of comfort. It's weird walking into the, you know, you don't realize how big these arenas are until you walk in and there's nobody there. I mean, that kind of gives you a different perception of the size of these places. But I think everybody in the NBA, we're all, whether you're playing, officiating, coaching, broadcasting, whatever your role is in the NBA, our job now is to give our fans and give our customers the best experience we can during this time in all of our lives, and to make it work. Players are making it work, coaches are making it work, and it's our job to make it sound the way it normally sounds. Mm. That's our job. And doing it at the Garden, I think it just feels, it's just we have a better tech. Most teams are taking the feed from Orlando into their arenas and then sending it out in various ways other places. So the NBA arenas are the central distribution point. So you can have more monitors and more feeds, and it's probably the ideal place to do something that is not ideal.
For sure. However, the chemistry between you and Cedric Maxwell has always been the best part of your broadcast. And as I've listened, I think you guys sound fantastic as always. One more quick thing, and I know she wasn't with the Celtics for very long, but why is Carol Lawson a great pick for Duke women's basketball?
I'm so excited about Carol. I was bummed when she left. I was thrilled when she came. Her devotion, it's funny because I got to know Carol first when she started to do some national radio games. She did some stuff for the Wizards.
Right.
And what struck me when I first talked to her then, and I'm old enough, when I first broke into the league with Minnesota, I was doing TV games in Minnesota, but my summer job was doing WNBA games. Minnesota had a new WNBA team at that time, and I broadcast games Carol Lawson played in. So when, you know, I knew her that way, and when she was trying to broadcast games, her desire to be good at the job and to learn everything she could learn about what makes a good broadcast, her preparation, all of that. And I knew she had wanted to coach and she had done some coaching. I said, you know, it was obvious to me, you can meet people in a different context and tell they are successful in their field because of the way they carry themselves. And her devotion to it, to coaching, to learning, I think all of us in the country we live in right now have realized, because we're a little starved for humility, so we realize how valuable it is in people to have it. And her devotion to the craft, her humility in approaching it, is just stood out from the beginning, and she's just someone you want to be around. I think she's going to do phenomenally well at her job, and she may stay there for life. But I said this, I tweeted this when she took the job. Becky Hammond is the first in line. Right, she has earned that place because she has been Pop's assistant for so long. And I was disappointed that night he had Tim Duncan coach, when I thought Becky should have coached that game, but that, who cares what I think. Becky's earned her place at the front of the line, but don't be surprised when that barrier gets broken one day, and it will, get broken one day, and there will be a female coach in the NBA, don't be shocked if Kara Lawson is the one who jumps the line and is the first.
That would be amazing. So excited for her, and I can't wait for college basketball to return so she gets this opportunity that she has waited for. All right, you can find Sean on Twitter at Sean Grandy, PBP, voice of the Boston Celtics right now from the, well, not right now, but from the Celtics locker room, and also check out his Twitter so you can see some of the cool photos and the videos. It's always good to talk to you. The playoffs are upon us in August. It's so weird, but it's still good to talk to you.
I'll steal you a power bar, too.
I could use a power bar. We could all use a power bar. That's kind of funny. If you haven't seen the photos, they're not the only broadcast team that are inside the locker rooms of their various stadiums. And it's kind of cool to go behind the scenes a little bit, to have the curtain peeled back. And Sean's always a great talker, so I appreciate picking his brain about Brad Stevens and the contract extension, about the Raptors and why they will be a tough out. I like what he had to say about LeBron, and I do agree with him. LeBron is even more motivated than ever. That was why there was always going to be a finish to this season, because LeBron was pulling everyone else along with him, like it or not. And it should be a really compelling playoff run that starts on Monday. Wow. Very strange. So you can find Sean on Twitter. You can listen to him on the Celtics Radio Network and whenever he joins us here on the show. All right, coming up, we've got weird numbers from the NFL that we're still working our way through. They're good, but they're weird. And we're also asking you, which is the sport that seems most awkward without the fans in the stands? So on Twitter, ALL Radio, also on our Facebook page, it's After Hours with Amy Lawrence on CBS Sports Radio.
You are listening to the After Hours Podcast.
We have a real unique situation, and I think that we're going to be able to really have a great experience. I think that our safety precautions that we're doing won't be unfamiliar to a lot of people when we look at the general protocol of the country, or we look at how you get together numbers of people. I'm confident that we've got a very educated situation, and that our fans can come and have a safe experience at our stadium, along with, of course, our players having the safety there required on the football field.
This is After Hours with Amy Lawrence.
For the first time in 109 days, Jerry Jones speaks to the media. Goes back to the draft experience when he was on his yacht. And so he has broken his silence and, among other things, talked about how he does expect that there will be fans in the stands at AT&T Stadium come this fall. Now, it's going to be a fluid situation like everything else in 2020, right? We don't know what the mandates will be in the individual states where teams will be holding games. We don't know what the capacity limit will be, whether it's 25%, maybe it's 10%, maybe it's 50%, and also how the NFL will handle it. Will they have separate entrances? Will the fans have to stay in a particular section? I mean, the security will be a major part of it. And of course, fans will be allowed nowhere near the players. I can imagine you might not even see fans in the lower bowl because that would be harder to police. But Jerry Jones believes that they have a plan in place and they're working toward having fans in the stadium because they want to be there. No one's forcing them to be there because they choose to be there. If you're a season ticket holder of a team and you've heard something from your franchise, I'd love to hear from you. On Twitter, ALL Radio, also on our Facebook page, After Hours with Amy Lawrence. So Jerry Jones speaking out, a lot of football quarterbacks and coaches and defensive players, even running backs. We're getting it every day now. The Cardinals began practices on Wednesday, and now we're starting to see more of that, the next phase where you've got teams actually on the field running through what looks like a typical practice, as if nothing else is out of the ordinary. The NFL has released the numbers from the first few weeks of virus testing, and here's why I feel like there could be confidence, certainly on Jerry Jones' part, but on the part of other owners who may be looking at having fans or at least game planning for a full season, which right now that is the mode that they're in. Through Tuesday, the NFL had conducted over 109,000 COVID tests. That is a lot of tests. And of course, it's a repeat. over and over and over and over again. They're getting tested every day. And PA just agreed to extend the daily testing protocols through September 5th. So we're talking about now Labor Day weekend and probably beyond, too, if things continue to go as well. I don't know that you could have anticipated it would be this positive, though. And by positive, I don't mean positive tests. I mean positive as in yay. Dr. Alan Sills cites a positivity rate. Players, coaches, staffers. So this is overall 109,000 plus tests. Only 0.46% have come back positive. Among players specifically, the number is 0.8%. Now, if you think about their intake testing, remember there were a bunch of guys who hit the COVID-19 reserve list. The initial intake process was roughly 10,000 people. And among those 10,000 people, the positive rate was nearly 2% for players. So they've dropped from 2% with the first round of tests down to 0.8%. And Dr. Sills calls that, well, he says he's pleasantly surprised, but he says they're thrilled with the way that the numbers have come down. And it's proof, he says, of how seriously the players, the team members, the coaches, staffers are taking this process. Something else, though, that jumped out at me, which I shared earlier on the show, because I actually wondered, I was going to make a joke about it, how it better not include Matt Stafford and Gardner Minshew and other false positives. Well, the official word for those false positive tests, according to Dr. Sills, is unconfirmed. So in other words, a player's had a negative, then a positive, then more negatives. And with no symptoms, they continue testing. If it keeps coming back negative, they consider that to be a false positive or an unconfirmed case. But in fact, the 0.46% does include false positives. I guess they're erring on the side of caution. That's your margin for error for sure. You know, all statistics have a margin for error. So it does include the guys who've tested positive repeatedly, so more than once until they're cleared, but it also includes the false positives like Matthew Stafford. Still, this is great news because it's much lower than what the NFL had set as its goal. So they have to stay under a certain number to continue operating, to not take drastic steps. And so this is huge. The NFL and the NFLPA planned that they would actually stop testing every other day if they were below 5%. But they agreed then instead they liked how it was going and they would just stay on the current plan. So I think if you are a fan of the NFL, you can be cautiously optimistic. Although it is kind of funny that they include the false positives in there just because, I guess, you'd rather have a slightly inflated number than one that was lower, which seems to be the case around the country too, actually. All right, which of the sports is weirdest with no fans in the stands? Whether you're watching it, whether you're listening to it on Twitter, A-Law Radio, also on our Facebook page, After Hours with Amy Lawrence. Coming up, the commissioner of the Big 12 Conference speaks about their decision to push forward with college sports, and OSU coach Ryan Day sharing his feelings about the Big 10's cancellation.
You are listening to the After Hours Podcast.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
Possible blitz being shown by the Badgers. Fields with the ball, back to throw, looking left, looking middle of the field, fires middle of the field, and it's caught at the 5, and dancing into the end zone goes Ohio State's receiver, K.J. Hill, on a touchdown pass of 16 yards as he weaved his way through the Badger defense, and Ohio State has their first lead of the night, 23-21.
This is After Hours with Amy Lawrence.
Paul Keels on the Learfield IMG College Network. Ohio State football, Ohio State play-by-play, not something that we will hear this coming fall. And maybe not in the spring, according to Urban Meyer. There's no chance that they will be able to move football successfully from the fall semester to the spring semester. However, there are some teams, I think, that are potentially preparing with that idea in mind. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence on CBS Sports Radio. Over the past 48 hours, there's continued to be not just news from the college football world, but reaction to what have been some some decisions that were hotly contested and also hotly debated, and that left a lot of people frustrated and upset in their wake. And we know they weren't easy decisions, according to those who made them, Larry Scott of the Pac-12 and Kevin Warren of the Big Ten. But certainly now it's left to the coaches to try to figure out how to keep their kids engaged, how to continue to practice with them. I mean, they're still supposed to be practicing 20 hours a week. What did Nebraska coach Scott Frost say? That he has no idea what he's supposed to do with these guys if there's no football. That was before the Big Ten decision was made. And Nebraska's been told sternly and publicly by the Big Ten brain trust that there will be no football, that you don't get to go out on your own and find your own games, that you can't strike off for this year because that's not what Big Ten schools do. So that's kind of been squashed. Ryan Day now is trying to figure out what do we do moving forward and how can we navigate yet another disappointment in 2020?
Yesterday was a tough day for all of us. You know, we woke up this morning with really our focus on what's next. And that's really focusing on the spring and the spring schedule and you know, working on the plans for moving forward into the fall and the different options that are available. Right now it's devastating. And, you know, there's this time of mourning, but we're focused on this, of getting this season in the spring or winter or however you call it going in January. So we have something to work towards. It is going to be very, very difficult. You know, this whole year has been difficult. You know, we're going to stick together and work through it. And it's going to be difficult for a lot of people. There's no question.
Every time I think about college football in the spring, I just draw a blank. Of course, they typically do their spring practices. And we know spring football can draw a ton of fans in a typical year. You can see some of these large stadiums, not quite full, but drawing 50, 60,000 people just to come out and watch an intra-squad scrimmage. I don't know how it would work, with TV contracts, how it would work with in conjunction with the other sports and with the travel and everything else. Will things be that much improved in January? I don't know that either. So as much as it feels like the Big 12 and the Pac-12 completely dropped the ball in terms of preparation for a fall season, and that's what they kept saying, we're uncertain about how this goes. We don't know if our health and safety protocols are good enough. We don't have enough time. Well, I mean, you can't really plan ahead for January and know anything different, anything more concrete. I guess the difference is you could have a plan in place and you could move forward like the Big 12 and like the ACC and like the SEC are doing now. Maybe a few more months makes a difference and you feel like then you'll be more prepared. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence on CBS Sports Radio. Our toll-free line is 855-212-4227. That's 855-212-4CBS, and it's sponsored by Geico. Did you know right now Geico offers an extra 15% credit for your car, motorcycle, and RV policies? What are you waiting for? Visit geico.com to learn more. So that's Ryan Day of Ohio State. Dabble Swinney, who of course, is the championship coach for Clemson, and he's seen the movement of his players, including Trevor Lawrence, but not limited to Trevor. He's seen these guys step up, demand that their voices be heard, use their social media, use the video conference platforms, get together and do calls with players across other conferences. And so I can imagine he's extremely proud. I would be. I am, and I don't even know them personally. One of the things that he's been asked, though, is if you don't have the Big Ten and the Pac-12 participating in the college football playoff system and you end up crowning a different national champ, who knows if it's Clemson or if it's LSU again? Who knows where that champ comes from or how they design it? Because they would have to retool the format, obviously. But Dabo is saying that absolutely not, the championship would not be diminished. He said it wouldn't be a damaged title, wouldn't be a title with an asterisk. He says the four best teams can still go play for the title. And he points to Clemson's track record. We've been one of those teams for 5 years in a row. And so it doesn't change anything for us. Now, if you look at the schedules, the way they're set up, the ACC wanting to play a non-conference game, of course, the SEC going straight conference, the Big 12 still kind of looking at their options and hoping to release a tweaked schedule sometime in the next couple of days, well, then these guys could still presumably put together a full schedule, even with limited options outside of their own conference, because they've already decided to kind of to stay in league and give themselves more flexibility. So it is possible, and why not? If two of your conferences are bowing out, I guess it makes it more simple. Dabo says, whoever wins it, wins it. That's the champ. It's the same way in every sport. Somebody is going to win a championship, so maybe it's a shortened season, maybe it's not as many teams or whatever. But you best believe whoever wins it is going to have to earn it. So the three conferences moving forward, of course, the Big 12 admitted that there was a lot of debate and that they kind of waffled back and forth and it was a really difficult decision. But Commissioner Bob Bowlsby has indicated they did it together. This wasn't an autonomous decision.
All along, it has not been my decisions. It's not been solely the board's decision. It's been we've been relying upon healthcare professionals, people that are working in the space all the time. And ultimately, the safety and security, the good health and well-being of our student athletes and our staff members on campus is our number one priority.
Bowlsby is also a member of the College Football Playoff Committee. And he said that they have a call next week to figure out how they can retool the system. So it's not just the Big Ten and the Pac-12 who've backed out. You've also got the Mountain West and the Mid-American who've decided not to have fall football. Okay, so then there are four FBS conferences that are missing. The Big East, I thought, decided as well on Wednesday that they were not going to move forward. And so there are conferences that have backed out, but there are conferences that are moving forward. And so they will figure out what format makes sense. Is there a format where we can, as long as these conferences press through, where we can adjust for 1 year and then go back to the system that we had? Now, this is obviously a system designed by the Power Five. So I don't know how the Big Ten and the Pac-12 feel about it, but they've essentially given up the right to be part of the decision-making process by bowing out. It's After Hours here on CBS Sports Radio. Something else that Bowlsby said is that he talked to athletes as part of kind of a joint call with different member schools and coaches and athletic directors, that they invited athletes to be on this call. And, you know, they talked about the need for discipline and how it's not possible to be in a bubble. And so it's really up to the accountability and responsibility of the athletes to do the right thing and make smart choices.
When they're in the sports environment, when they're in a training room, a locker room, a weight room, they're in a controlled environment, and we can do a pretty good job of disinfecting and sanitizing and using social distancing. It's when you're away from the complex and when you're in your apartment or you're off to a party or you're doing something around other people that you know may be a risky behavior.
That ultimately is the question, right? It keeps coming back to that. How can you trust college kids to make the smart choices? And I've been waving this banner now for days, not just on the air, but with, you know, with personal conversations. And my mom just went back to school on Wednesday. She's teaching again, teaching math, and she's having to abide by health and safety protocols. And she said to me, why are they playing football? They have to wear masks and be distant inside. Well, then why are they playing football? And it's a tough question to ask. And I said to her, well, because she's concerned that the kids, not only are they, you know, sweating all over each other playing football, but she said they're kids. The second they get outside the door, she says, I can see them outside my window. They're hanging all over each other. They're bouncing around. They're taking their masks off. And I said, Mom, you're right. Kids are going to be kids unless there's a penalty. They're going to do what they want to do, and they don't really understand the importance of it, especially not in high school. But I said, you wear the mask and they wear the mask to protect you. Forget about them. I mean, yes, they're, you know, you don't want anyone to get sick and die, but you're the one who is at higher risk, not these kids. So you don't worry about what they're doing when they're not with you. Worry about what they're doing when they're with you. As long as they're wearing their masks inside, as long as you're wearing your mask and you're protected when you're around them, then that's really all that you can be worried about right now. So we had that conversation too as she went back to school. One more from Bob Bowlsby. He address this idea that there is a connection between myocarditis, which is a heart condition, can be treated if it is caught early enough, but it can also be serious, and it's connected to multiple viruses, not just COVID-19, and there's still a lot of research that's being done. But he did address that in his comments yesterday about the Big 12.
We have talked to experts on cardiac care after viruses and during viruses, and the indication from them is that there are reasons for concern, and that if we have positive tests, we need to make sure that prior to the time student athletes return to high activity, they receive cardiac MRIs and echocardiograms and EKGs.
I applaud them for trying. You can always shut it down, but you can't dial it up again. The decisions made by the conferences to postpone, they're irreversible at this point. The ACC, the SEC, the Big 12, they can follow suit, but they couldn't turn around and restart. So I'm glad they're trying for the sake of the athletes. Coming up Thursday, yet another busy day in both the NHL, the NBA, Major League Baseball. Now 2 days into the Stanley Cup playoffs, we've already had seven sudden deaths that weren't so sudden. If you missed my conversation with Justin Emerson from Las Vegas, he covers the Vegas Golden Knights. They are cruising. They've got game two against the Blackhawks on Thursday. And that's part of our podcast. It was really good to hear him talk about not just hockey in Vegas, but hockey overall, and right now watching the games in Edmonton. So that's After Hours, AmyLawrence.com, for our full podcast in its entirety. We've got most of the NBA playoff bracket set, not the entire thing, but we certainly will be looking more at that in the coming days, and obviously gunning toward the weekend, which will be busy. And when I get back on the air tonight, I'll be able to tell you about my first ever Skype call with my 98-year-old grandmother. Doesn't have a cell phone, has never looked at a computer, doesn't know what a device is if it hits her upside the head, but she is going to Skype with me. And so I will have the full report. I can't wait. I'm sure I'm going to cry. Enjoy your Thursday. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence on CBS Sports Radio.
Boom!
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic? And conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.